You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It is a new year, but for Congress, it begins with a hangover from the old year, problems and issues left unresolved. And looming over everything, this week's erratic tweet storm from President Trump, and in the upcoming book from Michael Wolff, charges from Trump's former chief strategist Steve Bannon that the president and his family may have committed treason. Let's see how this is resonating with members of Congress. With us now, Democratic Congressman Dan Kildee of Flint. Congressman, welcome and Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me on.
You and your colleagues have quite a long to-do list with some big deadlines looming. Let's start with the government running out of funding January 19th. What are the obstacles, as you see them, to getting a long-term budget deal?
Well, I think one obstacle is the lack of willingness of the Republican leadership to honestly engage with Democrats in order to get a majority to support a longer-term funding plan. When I say honestly, the struggle that we've had is that Democrats are often put in a position days before a government shutdown where the Republican leadership comes to us and says, we don't have the votes to keep the government open among the Republican caucus. We need you to come to the table with some votes to keep the doors open, when we have not been even consulted on the priorities in the budget. And in fact, very often, the priorities that Democrats feel strongly about are either left off the table or cut. If Speaker Ryan wants to have an honest conversation, we're all ears, but we have to be a part of a discussion that formulates what the budget looks like, not just be in a position of having to rescue the Republicans from their own fractious caucus.
We did hear that at the end of last year. Well, we wanted to get bipartisan support, and the Democrats wouldn't play.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great talking point, and they use it, I guess, routinely, and some folks, I guess, fall for it. But it's a falsehood. I mean, if they really want Democratic support, they would be talking to us about reauthorization of the Children's Health Insurance Plan. They would talk to us about some kind of parity in the way the new budget caps are set between defense and domestic priorities. If they really wanted to have a conversation with us, they would talk about how we're going to deal with the really difficult problem of Dreamers, those young people who came here as children through no fault of their own and are now at risk of deportation because of the new policies of the Trump administration. If they want to have a conversation about those things, we can come to common ground. But they can't continue to push those discussions to the last 48 hours of a budget deadline and expect to have anything significant really take place.
And then comes another Band-Aid, the short-term continuing resolution. It just defers things for a few more weeks, and then here we go again.
Yeah, and you know, I make some effort to not be overly partisan. I mean, it's a hard thing to do, but I try very hard. But it is a fact that the Republican Party controls the Senate, they control the House, and they have the White House. They have consolidated power, and they have not been able to do something as simple as keep the government open for more than a few weeks at a time. Literally, a few weeks at a time. That's not responsible leadership. And there's a reason. The functional majority of Congress is not comprised of either Democrats or Republicans. The functional, thoughtful majority is some mixture of the two. And the Speaker should take advantage of the fact that he does have a functional majority, but he's not going to find all of those people in his caucus meeting. He needs Democrats and Republicans.
Congressman, you mentioned DACA. Let's talk about that. Can you get DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival Program, can you get that fixed before the president's March deadline? What's it going to take?
We could do it next week, actually, because my estimate, and this is based on a lot of conversations, is that there's something in the neighborhood of 300 members of the House out of 435 who would support codifying the DACA policy. You know, this was policy that was put in place by President Obama in anticipation that Congress would act to make it law. And just to remind the listeners, what we're talking about is allowing those young people who came here as children, who only know the United States, who don't have any other life experience, to continue to stay as long as they keep their nose clean, stay out of trouble, pay their taxes, act as essentially as citizens without citizenship. This would allow them to stay and not require them to be deported. That's all we're saying. Most people support it in the country, and most of Congress supports it, but the Republican leadership won't put it up for a vote. because it doesn't conform to what they call the Hastert rule, which is this odd rule that they use. It's an informal rule that says that if a majority of Republicans don't support a bill, even if a majority of Congress does support it, you don't get the vote. And that's unfortunately where we stand right now.
The president just said no DACA deal without funding for the wall. Could you live with that in order to keep the dreamers in this country?
I think it's a dangerous thing for us to do, to start using the federal budget as a way to build a monument to a campaign promise that's not logical. Very few people who really understand border security think that a wall makes any sense. And in fact, Republicans on the border, many of them, don't want to see a wall. They want to see smart security at the border. That would include some mix of fencing, of electronic surveillance, basically a 21st century system, not something that is Donald Trump's Great Wall of China, which is sort of what he wants. He wants to see something big and menacing. So I think it's dangerous to go down that path. Secondly, let's let these ideas stand on their own merit. If dreamers should be allowed to stay in the United States and there are conditions that they should have to adhere to in order to stay, let's vote yes or no on that. If there should be or shouldn't be a wall or some other form of border security, that idea ought to stand on its own merit and not conflate those two, unless the president is willing to do a comprehensive immigration bill that deals with all of these problems. But to trade off a kind of a dumb idea that costs a lot of money and really doesn't provide the kind of security that it proposes to provide in order to not deport 800,000 people who only know this country, it's just not a smart way to approach the problem.
Would you be willing to risk a government shutdown over the DACA issue?
The decision to shut the government down won't be ours. It'll really be the majority's. But I will say there is a point in time where principle has to stand. I don't like the idea of shutting down the government. It would be because the Republicans can't put the votes together to keep the government open among their own numbers. And if they're unwilling to compromise on anything, something as universally supported as dealing with DACA, then I would say we would have to hold firm, and it'd be then up to Republicans whether or not they think it's worth shutting down the government in order to force the deportation of 800,000 young people who are as American as every neighbor they know, with the exception of the fact that they don't have citizenship. That would be on them.
I want to turn to the CHIP program, Children's Health Insurance Program, with bipartisan support, and yet states are getting ready to wind their programs down because the federal funding deadline came and went, no federal funding. What's it going to take to rescue CHIP?
Well, we simply ought to reauthorize it the way we have since it was first created decades ago. I mean, this was a piece of legislation championed by Senator Ted Kennedy and Senator Orrin Hatch, two people that had different ideologies but came together around the idea that children ought to have access to health care. 100,000 young people in Michigan, for example, benefit from this. We ought to simply reauthorize it the way we have done for decades and not allow it to be used as a bargaining chip in other battles. Let's leave the kids out of it, basically, is what I say we should do. It's particularly problematic for us, for the people in Flint, because it is through the CHIP program that a lot of the money that Senator Stabenow and Senator Peters and I were able to secure is being delivered for Flint's water recovery. So if CHIP is not reauthorized, a lot of the support for additional health and infrastructure improvements in Flint could be suspended or go away, and that would be tragic.
Congressman, I want to shift gears to the president, who has had quite the interesting week. Yesterday, he had a very public divorce, if you will, from one of his top former advisors, Steve Bannon. We see the latest polling from 538 finds about 38% of Americans approve of the president, no matter what he says or does. But for the nearly 57% of Americans who disapprove, and people who are outright alarmed at things like the big nuclear button taunt on Twitter to North Korea's Kim Jong-un, they're looking at you in Congress and saying, do something. What do you say to these people?
Well, I mean, I understand the frustration because I deal with it every single day. The most important thing we can do in Congress is exercise our constitutional authority to check the power of the president and not concede our authority to him. That is going to require Democrats and Republicans, because right now the Republicans are in the majority. They control everything. So for those who say we should consider impeachment, my view is I have to allow Mr. Mueller's investigation to be completed and look at the facts and see whether or not any of his conclusions would support that. So far, I have not seen anything that does. But in the meantime, let's let our constitutional protections continue to hold. It's worrisome and very troubling that otherwise reasonable Republicans that I have worked with in the 5 years that I've been in Congress seem to have lost their ability to discern truth from fiction when it comes to Donald Trump. Or they know better and they're unwilling to challenge him. There are Republicans who are afraid of a Donald Trump tweet, and they are conceding their constitutional responsibility to check the power of the president, something that has been a part of our government for 240 years, because of their own fear of a tweet from the president criticizing them or his unwillingness to stand with them. What I say to them is, put some steel in your spine. Look at the president's track record. He went to the red state of Alabama and couldn't get his own candidate through the primary, and then couldn't get his own candidate through the general election. They ought to be willing to stand up to him. Unless they do, I think what we're seeing with Mr. Bannon and some of these other problems, his taunting of Kim Jong-un, puts us in real jeopardy. And I'm calling on my Republican colleagues to do their duty.
Congressman Dan Kildee, Democrat from Flint, you and your colleagues in the House will be hitting the deck running when you get back next week. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.